In about 20 minutes, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets for Rangers Astros.
Go Astros!
There it is. Saturday afternoon's game in Arlington. We've got a pair of tickets for you, so keep it locked in to the horn all afternoon long, but especially be listening around 5:25 for your chance to win. Once again, that game will be in Arlington. Three-game series between the Rangers and Astros starting tomorrow night at the Gilf. We gave away a pair of tickets yesterday. We're giving away a pair of tickets today, so don't miss out on your opportunity to win. We also have Rod's Rant of the Day coming up at about 25 minutes, and we've got Texas Longhorn Baseball coming up a little bit more than an hour from now. Hopefully Texas Baseball can give us a similar show to what we got from the NBA last night, Rod B.
It was amazing.
A couple of spectacular play-in games in the Western Conference last night. We'll start with the nightcap. The LA Lakers holding off the Golden State Warriors in a thriller. 103-100, the final. LeBron James, after losing the ability to see, after taking a hit to the face from Draymond Green, hit a go-ahead 34-foot three-pointer to give the Lakers the lead and ultimately the win. Rod, the Lakers were struggling. They were down 13 at half. It looked like Golden State was going to go into Staples and steal a win and put the defending champs on the brink of elimination. But LeBron and Anthony Davis got it going in the second half, and the Lakers found a way to get it done.
Yeah, Lakers missed 31 shots in the first half, and that was their most missed shots in any half this season. So it was looking bleak at one point. And as I will give a lot of credit to the Golden State Warriors defense. Andrew Wiggins was locking down LeBron early on. I think LeBron was settling too early on. But LeBron in the first half, when defended by Andrew Wiggins, was 0 of 6 in the first half. And Anthony Davis, when defended by Draymond Green, we all know he's a defensive stopper, an all-time great, actually, defensive stopper. He was 2 of 8 in the first half when defended by Draymond Green. So both of those guys struggled in the first half. They had 11 points combined in the first half. They flipped the script in the second half. They had 36 points combined, and they shot 64% between the two of them in the second half, compared to 16% shooting between the two of them in the first half. So night and day difference between what they did to flip the switch from the first half to the second half.
The Lakers played a lot better. The Warriors also played a lot worse.
Also true.
8 turnovers in the third quarter by Golden State allowed the Lakers to get back into the game last night. I know his team lost, but, dude, how much fun to watch is Steph Curry?
Oh, yeah, man.
That's ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, every time the ball leaves his hands, I think it's going in. I don't think I've ever felt that way about another player, ever. Like, I assume it's going in. I don't just think it's going in. Like, I'm surprised when he misses. That's how good of a shooter he is.
Yeah. I mean, that the shot before the half, I think, is symbolic of that, right? That's the best example of what you're talking about. He has to, I forget, it's like, I don't know, 5-6 seconds left or something like that. Everybody in the arena, everybody on the opposing team knows Steph's going to take this last shot before the half. The Lakers have like 3 different defenders that run out on him to try to get him to deter the shot, to get him to think about giving up the ball. He doesn't and shoots some ridiculous. I mean, look at the degree of difficulty from some of those shots. Just a ridiculous little step back, creates a little bit of space and nails it right before the half. And everybody's thinking the same thing. Like you said, I knew he was going to hit that.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you feel. And I've said this before, and I truly believe it. The anticipation, because now we know he's the greatest shooter of all time, it makes it so exciting because the anticipation when the ball is released from his hands, there is a built-in excitement that builds as a fan watching because you do have this certainty about when the ball is released from his hands. Like, he can release it from anywhere. He can be close to half court and you'll go, this collective gasp by everybody watching, and you can hear it, and that's what makes him so exciting, man. He is. I hope we enjoy it while we can because we haven't seen anything before it. Larry Bird was as close as we saw before this, and I don't know, maybe it was somebody before that, so I apologize, old basketball fans, but it's going to be tough to see anything close to a Steph Curry post-Steph Curry.
God, so much fun to watch.
It's unbelievable.
You can only count on one hand how many players have been more fun to watch in NBA history.
I agree with this.
Best shooter ever. Maybe the best silencer ever in terms of silencing an opposing crowd. And he's one of the best off-ball players in NBA history. you know, certain guys, when they don't have the ball, they're not that much of a threat. Mm. Steph Curry is a massive threat because he just doesn't stop moving. You called him the Energizer Bunny earlier in the show. That's what he is.
It's going,
he
man.
Never runs out of gas. He was getting double-teamed and triple-teamed all night long. Still had 37 points, was 6 of 9
nice.
From downtown. He was ridiculous, but it wasn't enough. The big storyline, the shot by LeBron James.
Woo!
Spectacular fall-away 34-footer with less than a minute to go. Are we still claiming that LeBron James isn't clutch? Can we put that dumbass narrative to bed?
Please.
We should have done that 15 years ago, but at this point, that thing should be sound asleep. That thing should be in a damn coma. You can take it off life support, too.
Strangle that damn thing.
It is dead.
Put it out of its misery.
Yeah, get that 220-pound Russian chick to sit on it.
With her big butt,
yeah,
huh?
I like the story we had it off the record
that
yesterday.
That killer butt she had.
Yeah, weapons of ass destruction. She killed her husband with her behind. Just a phenomenal story. Check out the podcast page, hornfm.com, if you missed that. Rod, that shot wasn't luck from LeBron James. Like, he actually turned, squared up to the hoop, and got a good look, and he nailed it from 34 feet away. That wasn't just like a random-ass half-court heave that he got lucky that went in. Like, that's how LeBron has evolved his game over the years.
Good point.
It's so impressive because he's not the best athlete in the world anymore, right?
Yeah.
For 5, 6, 7 years, that guy could do anything he wanted to athletically, and nobody could stop him. He's still one of the best athletes in the world, but mid-30s, father time, catching up to him a little bit. He's had to evolve and learn how to shoot.
Yep.
Like 10 years ago, LeBron's not hitting that shot. Mm-hmm. He's not taking that shot. No chance. LeBron has become such an effective three-point shooter, and he now has the ability. He's not Steph Curry, where he's going to do that once
every
a quarter.
Yeah.
But the fact that he has the ability to do that just shows how well he's aged, man. He's a fine wine out there.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I remember, you probably remember this too, remember when the Spurs, probably the second time the Spurs played the Heatles in the finals. And the game plan by Pop was pretty much, let's clog up the paint, and let's lay off LeBron. Kawhi was laying off of him. I'm going to give you the shot because I know you want to drive to the basket and create, and you want to get to the basket for that easy, that high percentage shot. But I'm going to make you shoot what's a low percentage shot for you. Because at the time, LeBron hadn't really developed that outside game like he's got now. And LeBron really couldn't figure it out. When they took away that drive to the basket, when they took away his ability to, you know, create by getting in the lane, and they denied him that, he was less effective. They neutralized him in that way, neutered him almost. Mm. He recognized that. And you'll recognize after that, about 2 years, two, three years after that, he starts developing his perimeter game a little bit more. He starts developing that little fadeaway jumper that he's got now. He even faded away a little bit on that three-pointer.
He
was fading back. I was like, is he fading back on the three-pointer?
Right in Steph Curry's face,
on the 34-footer? Yes.
Which made it even better.
It's amazing.
Like, I don't like either of those teams. I was just watching in all of that game. I did not have a rooting interest at all. Actually, I did. Warriors plus 7, which hit. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, you did say that. You said that was automatic. You said that was easy money.
And
your cousin said that.
Sure enough, it was. But yeah, that shot was amazing. And then Steph Curry's reaction. Like, are you kidding me? And I'm sitting here thinking, dude, Steph, you've put that look on so many people's faces over the years.
That
about
dagger.
Time.
That
about time this happened
dagger
to you, man.
In the heart of a lot of people.
So that shot was impressive in its own right, Rod, but even more impressive considering the fact that a sniper shot LeBron James in the eye 2 minutes before the shot went down, and he couldn't see. He had gone blind after taking a hit from Draymond Green. Here's LeBron after the game talking about that incredible shot.
You know, I put in a lot of work in my game. You know, after, you know, Draymond finger to the eye, I was literally seeing three rims out there. So I just shot at the middle one, and I was able to, with the grace of the man above, I was able to knock it down.
I shot at the middle one. Rod, I was worried he wasn't going to get up. I thought LeBron James was done after that common foul from Draymond Green with just over 2 minutes to go. He did get hit in the face.
He did get hit in the eye.
He did get hit in the face.
Man.
He did get hit hard. But a nice acting job by LeBron James, whether it was to buy himself some extra rest, whether it was, and you brought this up earlier, maybe try to get Draymond Green ejected from the game, right? See if the refs would convert that thing to a flagrant two and you don't have to deal with Draymond for potential overtime. Regardless of what it was, it added to the theater. It was already fantastic theater last night, but LeBron doing that and then hitting that shot made it even better. Also made more people hate LeBron James, I think.
It did. People today are just taking shots at LeBron after hitting a game-winning fadeaway three-point shot in front of Steph Curry. But I just think that's the kind of, you know, vitriol and angst that LeBron James can incite. So I do think he got poked, but yes, he got poked in the eye. But yes, he did kind of, you know, play it up a little bit. And I think he did that because he wanted some more rest, number one, because he was, I think he was a little bit exhausted considering all the minutes that he played. He also was trying to get Draymond Green penalized a little bit more. But that didn't work to no avail. And also, I think he wanted to, you know, gather himself, recalibrate. He did get poked in the eye. I think he got that line, though. All you guys out there who are Rocky fans, who remember Rocky IV, in Rocky IV, Rocky says the same exact thing after Drago beats his head in for a few rounds. He tells the trainer, hey, I can't really see anything. I'm seeing three of them. And Paulie, his longtime friend, Paulie, who's been with him from the jump, Paulie said, just hit the one in the middle, Rock. Just hit the one in the middle. LeBron James.
Mm.
Hit the one in the middle. I think he got it from Rocky, man. So you think at that time he saw himself as Rocky Balboa. Saw himself as the underdog.
Wow.
Which is obviously not really true.
Draymond Green punched LeBron in the face 100 times before that shot.
Now he's Drago, right? Yeah. Now he's a villain.
Unbelievable. Hey, it was an awesome shot. People hate on LeBron
shot,
all the time. People don't respect greatness enough. That's what we had last night, both of those guys. And Anthony Davis, too. He was huge in the fourth quarter. Got to give him some love. But obviously that shot by LeBron, a triple-double in what was basically a Game 7. I mean, it wasn't really a Game 7 because Golden State still has a chance. But, you know, it felt like a Game 7 last night.
It did feel like that.
And for LeBron to hit that shot and have a triple-double in that game, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, and give it up for Adam Silver. This is what he was trying to create or recreate. He wanted to try to manufacture that type of drama.
Yeah.
And I just think he had the perfect concoction, if you will, with those two superstars. So if you get the right mix, because the Spurs game was a competitive game too, not early on, but you didn't have the star power that you had with that LeBron versus Steph matchup. And like you said, man, it lived up to everything. Yeah, shout out to AD. We didn't talk about him enough, though. He did score 13 of the Lakers' 26 points in the fourth quarter. Was all him.
Yeah.
So he stepped up big in the game.
I'll give the Aggies some love, too. Alex Caruso, 14 points for the Lakers. Also played solid defense on Steph. Not great defense, but out of all the guys the Lakers threw at Steph Curry, Caruso so far in a way the best. All right, before we get to that Spurs-Grizzlies game and try to figure out what the Spurs are going to do this offseason, let me tell you all about Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. One of the best decisions of my life was going into Sharp Vision and getting that all-laser LASIK procedure. Changed my life for the better. I could watch all of the action last night. I can see everything without glasses and without contact lenses. My eyesight is better than 20/20, and that was made possible by my friends at Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. Stop putting off LASIK. I know you've thought about it before. I know you're tired of glasses. I know you're tired of putting in contacts and taking out contacts day in and day out. Do what I did and get into Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. The consultation is completely free. The procedure itself starts at just $4.95 per eye. They've got guaranteed financing available as well. There's no better time than right now to go to Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. The phone number to call to set up that free consultation, 512-596-2020. The website, sharp-vision.com. That's sharp with an E-vision.com. It is Sharp Vision Modern LASIK, the official LASIK provider of Austin FC. All right, Rod, you alluded to it a couple of minutes ago. Hard-fought game by the Spurs, but they come up on the losing end in Memphis. The final score, Grizzlies 100, Spurs 96. It was ugly early. Memphis led by as many as 21 points in the first quarter. You're thinking, oh, this sucks, and is this really the way the Spurs are going to have their season end?
Yeah.
But they fought back hard. They cut the deficit to 7 at halftime. They actually took a couple of leads midway through the third and into the fourth quarter, but down the stretch, too much Memphis. Really not enough San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give Memphis some credit. Jonas Valanciunas, the fourth Jonas brother.
They had no answer for him.
23-23.
Yeah.
I mean, ridiculous. Yeah. He was the only Grizz player with a lot of playoff experience, and he showed out last night in that postseason type of game. But the Spurs just, they couldn't hit shots. They thought they shot 35% as a team. DeMar DeRozan, unfortunately, continued his career-long playoff struggle, 5 of 21 from the floor. We said it yesterday, the Spurs aren't going to win unless DeMar DeRozan has a great game. And he did, 5 of 21. DeJounte Murray was 4 of 17 as well. Lonnie Walker, 2 of 8. Just not enough offensively for the Spurs, and they're going home.
Yeah, it showed a lot of heart, though. I mean, they were down 21 in the first quarter at one point. I thought it would be a blowout. And I wonder if I don't know, you know, who on that team would have brought it up, but I do wonder if they started thinking collectively, you know, do we want this to be Pop's last game where we get blown out in the play-in? I think you start to see some of that team pride come out, and they, you know, they did have more experience overall in their roster than Memphis, and I think you saw some of that actually materialize and play out. But ultimately, Memphis just has more talent. They're just a better roster. They're just a better team. Spurs are struggled going into this play-in game too. What they lost 10 of their 12 going into the game. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually a little surprised that they didn't allow that 21-point lead to really consume them. They fought back and actually made it a hell of a game. Had a chance to win it.
They did.
But like you said, didn't have enough clutch play down the stretch.
Man, the Spurs got kind of screwed in the second half of the season due to COVID. They just had such a backloaded schedule. They had to play so many games in such a short amount of time. Look, they weren't a championship contending team regardless, but I think that definitely impacted this team down the stretch.
I agree.
And yeah, you talk about Pop, it potentially his being his last game in San Antonio. Pop's obviously the most important guy, but DeMar DeRozan, free agent. Rudy Gay.
Good point.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Free agent. Patty Mills, free agent. Those guys have been in San Antonio for a number of years,
forever.
Especially Patty Mills, right? 10 of his 12 seasons in the league have been in San Antonio.
Yep.
Those guys might be gone. Like, that might have been their last game in a Spurs uniform as well. So it'll be interesting to see. Crazy offseason for the Spurs. Obviously, what happens with Pop is the most important thing. He's 72, hasn't really said anything hinting towards retirement, but the Spurs seem to be trending toward a rebuild. And I don't see any value in bringing back DeMar DeRozan or Rudy Gay or Patty Mills. I just don't. Let those guys get paid more elsewhere. You got to embrace the full-scale rebuild and start to build around some of your younger guys because the Spurs are in purgatory right now.
Yeah.
They got to start a rebuild, and the question is, Rod, does Pop want to be a part of that, or does he want to pass this on to somebody else?
Yeah, organization has really never been through anything like this. You brought up the stat earlier in the show. Great stat. Spurs, for the first time, the Spurs have failed to make the playoffs for consecutive seasons, and they've been around for 46, 45 years or so. So they've never been through this as an organization. I think that if Pop decides to hang it up and Pop decides he's moving on, he wants to retire, the Spurs are a smart, they're a intellectually curious organization, so they're always looking for ways to improve and get better. I bet he'll be involved in the process somehow. If he's not naming his successor, then I bet he'll be involved in advising them on who the successor should be. A lot of people believe that Becky Hammond, who's an assistant for the Spurs, could become the first female head coach in NBA history with the Spurs, that they're that kind of organization that could be stable enough to make that type of, you know, progressive move, to pioneer such a move.
If any team does it, it would be the Spurs.
Yeah.
No doubt. All right. The Spurs fall to Memphis 100-96, the final. That will end the 2020-2021 year for San Antonio. Only one Texas team remaining, as the Dallas Mavericks. They will start their postseason this Saturday in Los Angeles, taking on the L.A. Clippers, game one Saturday afternoon. And by the way, Golden State and Memphis will play tomorrow night, for those who are curious.
Shout out, Rod,
before we break for your rants of the day, we've got an opportunity for folks to win a pair of tickets to see the Rangers take on the Astros in Arlington.
Go Astros!
We'll take caller number 10 right now, 512-447-3776. That's 512-447-3776. If you're caller number 10, you'll win a pair of tickets to Rangers-Astros this Saturday in Arlington. Please don't call if you can't make it up to Arlington, okay? Don't waste our time. If you can go, if you can get to Arlington, please call in. Your chance to win is right now. All right, Rod B., what do you have coming up on your rant of the day?
Our good friends at CBS Sports have ranked all of the Power 5 coaches in college football. We'll see where the Big 12 coaches land, and we'll see where they have Sark ranked on their ranking. All of that and more right here on the Triple Option with RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've got it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. And this is about an article in CBS Sports. Tom Fornelli And I believe he does this annually, but he does a ranking of all the Power Five college football coaches. And he ranks them, all of them, of course, including, I believe, Notre Dame thrown in there, too. And in his rankings, the Big 12 is getting, I think, a lot of love. I think Big 12 is getting more love than most people nationally would give them. So I'll start, I guess I'll start at the bottom of the list because that's closer to where the Longhorns will be represented. Then I'll make my way to where the rest of the Big 12 is represented. So they have Dave Aranda, 62. He's the first Big 12 coach that is ranked on this list. I say the lowest Big 12 coach ranked on the list because I'm starting at the bottom. So he's ranked 62nd on the list of Power 5 coaches. The next Big 12 coach you'll get is Matt Wells of Texas Tech. He's at number 60. So you got Dave Aranda of Baylor at 62, Matt Wells at 60.
And there are 66 total?
I believe they're going 66. Yeah, okay. Plus 65 plus Notre Dame.
One. Got it. Okay.
And at 46, BK, they have Steve Sarkisian.
Mm.
They have him basically as the eighth best coach in the Big 12 based on their ranking coming in. Of course, he's a brand new coach. And before we get to Sark here, because I think this ranking is too low, honestly, for Sark. But it's an interesting ranking because he hasn't really accomplished anything yet as a head coach here at Texas. They have Neil Brown of West Virginia at 41.
Okay.
Ranked ahead of Sark. Chris Klieman of K-State at 37. They have Lance Leipold, the Kansas head coach.
The great Lance Leipold.
Leipold, excuse me, so I can make sure I get his name right. Leipold. At 35.
Let's go.
They got him at 35. So they're really, and I got to tell you, actually, his resume is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I know he hasn't done much at the highest level of Power 5 football, but at the lower levels, he's been a phenomenal coach.
It's pretty amazing that Kansas was able to hire that guy. Like, that shows you people think Kansas could still be a good job.
Because he was at Buffalo, right? And Buffalo was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought he could be able to bridge that to another job. People think of Kansas as a desert wasteland.
They'll figure it out.
College football.
We might all be dead by the time they do, but they'll figure it out.
No, I think he's a hell of a coach. I'm with you. I think that's a home run hire for Kansas. Some people don't really like it because they just don't know him. He's not a name, brand, commodity. Do the research on Lance Leipold, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. That's probably why they decided, you know what, they're going to rank him ahead of Steve Sarkisian.
Yes.
So, okay, here we go. Do you believe Sark's too low, too high? Right now, they have him as the 46th ranked coach in the Power 5. They have him as the 8th best coach in the Big 12.
I mean, how do you rank a coach who has never coached a game at his school?
He's been a head coach before, though.
That's true. Like, looking at that, yeah, I think Sark's too low. Like, okay, with what Sark was able to pull off at the Power 5 level at Washington, I think he should be ahead of Neil Brown. And I think he should be ahead of, no, that's it. I'd put Chris Klieman ahead of Steve
I was
going to
say,
right
it's interesting,
now.
Yeah, because I don't know if I'd put him ahead of Klieman.
I mean, Klieman's won national championships before. Not at
K-State.
He won FCS level,
yeah,
but he's won national championships
before. I think
he's
done a damn good job at K-State
he's
so
off
far.
To a good start
yeah.
at K-State. And then Lance Leipold, he's won multiple national championships before. At the D3 level, not the same, but
still,
those are skins on the wall.
Yep.
If you're a national championship, if you're a multi-time national championship winning head coach, then I got no problem with you being ranked ahead of a guy who, the last time he was a head coach, completely flamed out and completely failed. It wasn't all because of win-loss record. We know the
stuff,
extracurricular stuff that was involved there, but it was a failure for Steve Sarkisian. So that's the last little taste we've had of him as a head coach. Yeah, it's hard to rank him. If we're talking about just as a head coach, it's hard to put him too high on this list. Now, if you're talking about potential, yeah, he should be way higher than where he is. But in terms of what you know about the guys on this list, I don't have too many qualms with Sark being where he's at.
They're right up on Sark, or his right up on Sark says, so how about this spot for Sark? He was 46-35 in 7 seasons at Washington and USC, and he hasn't been a head coach since 2015, but he starts out in our rankings 2 spots ahead of the man who replaced him at USC, and you can argue that Sark was more underwhelming at USC than Helton has been. Of course, it's easy to understand why, given he's coming off an extremely successful stint at Alabama as the offensive coordinator. He was a surprise hire.
Yeah, I mean, if Sark was ranked below Clay Helton, I would have a problem.
Okay.
I would have a qualm.
They got him ahead of Scott Frost, Clay Helton, Justin Fuente. They got at 49.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam Pittman, Arkansas at 50.
I think Sark's going to do better than all of those guys. I think he's going to do a lot better than a lot of the guys who are listed ahead of him on this list. But, yeah, even though we haven't seen Sark coach a game at Texas, I already know he's going to do better than what Clay Helton has done at USC or what Scott Frost has done at Nebraska. No question about it.
Yeah, and I actually like Scott Frost, but it's just Nebraska's one of those places in the modern landscape of college football. It's really tough to bring Nebraska back, and it's crazy to think that. But Nebraska, Tennessee might be in that category now, where you know it's really I can't understand why they're struggling. Michigan might be one of the biggest mysteries out there. But anyway, I digress. Okay, let's continue with the Big 12 schools here. Actually, speaking of Michigan, they got Jim Harbaugh at 23, which. I know why they have him at 23, but I don't know.
Too high, too low?
I'm trying to think right now. It might be perfect for him, depending on who. Because they have David Shaw at 24,
okay.
Right behind him. P.J. Fleck at 25. Most people believe P.J. Fleck's a better coach than Jim Harbaugh right now, but they're going off what Jim Harbaugh has done in the past at Stanford. Right. They're probably thinking about what he did with San Fran when he was in the league early on at Michigan. So I think it's more about, like you said, what they've accomplished as a head coach, which is why Lance Leipold is ahead of Sark, Chris Klieman ahead of Sark, too.
That's exactly what it is, because Jim Harbaugh would fit into the category I was just talking about. Like, Sark is going to be better at Texas than Harbaugh has been at Michigan. There's no doubt in my mind.
We hope so. If not, we're in trouble.
So if we're, no doubt in my mind, that's true, too. So if we're ranking these coaches on potential, then this order would be completely different. But, if you throw in Jim Harbaugh's full coaching resume and what he did at Stanford, then, that's probably where he belongs.
Okay, let's get to the Big 12 coaches that are in the top 25 here since we are at the top of this list now. So TCU, Gary Patterson, they have at number 19 as the 19th best coach in the Power Five.
Well, he's number one when he plays Texas.
He loves playing Texas.
Yeah, outside of that. I mean, look, Gary Patterson, what he's done at TCU has been unbelievable.
I'm about to say, it's all about, think about what he's accomplished there. And not about what's happening
now. He's had some good years in the Big 12, too.
Some great years in the Big 12.
Years. Yep, played for a conference championship game and then had TCU, they were tied with Baylor.
At 2013-14 years, Trevon Boykin
Had the conference title game and the one true champion bit.
It's basically TCU and Baylor with the top of the conference.
This conference is such a mess. But, consistent success has not been there for Gary Patterson in the Big 12. But, you take his whole body of work into the mix with what he did, in the Mountain West. During his time at TCU, the fact that that guy's winning BCS Bowls at Texas Christian University.
Come on now.
I mean, what was that football program before he got there? So, I don't know who's 1 to 18 on this list, but I have a hard time thinking he should be as low as 19. I think he should be at least a few slots higher than that with what he's pulled off. If we're talking about just what he's done in the past, which it seems like this writer is doing, I think he should be a little bit higher.
Well, last year he was 16th, and in 2019 he was number 8. So they consistently have him higher. They're dropping him based on what's happened most recently. But they have him kind of as a top 10, top 15 coach, at least in the last few years.
Yeah.
All right, the next Big 12 coach they have, number 15, they have Mike Gundy. How about that? Mike Gundy, they have as the 15th best Power 5 coach. Last year he was 13th. So they really like Mike Gundy, and they really like Big 12 coaches. I've said this for years. The Big 12 does not get enough love for how good the coaches are because the NFL loves Big 12 coaches, probably more than it loves SEC coaches or Big 10 coaches or Pac-12 coaches or ACC. People say that's crazy. No, it ain't. Matt Campbell's gotten a ton of offers, all right, from the NFL. 3 years running, he's had NFL teams come try to poach him. Lincoln Riley. Every year, every offseason, the NFL comes knocking on Lincoln Riley's door. We've seen, even Tom Herman was getting random love from the NFL. Cliff Kingsbury got fired from a Big 12 school and hired in the NFL. Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule was given a monster contract by the Carolina Panthers. You don't see other conferences have their coaches poached by the NFL, or at least they are pursued by the NFL as much as Big 12 coaches in the last few years. You just don't.
Cliff Kingsbury's the primest example.
You just don't see it.
I mean, how do you get fired from college and land a job as an NFL coach the same offseason? That doesn't happen in any other league.
Doesn't happen. It's the Big 12, man. Specifically the offenses, though.
Yep.
So Mike Gundy at 15. What are your thoughts about that? I know you guys – have been hating on Mike Gundy a lot lately. I like Mike Gundy. I'm critical of him. I think at times some of his in-game decisions are questionable. But there's no doubt what he's done at Oklahoma State is extraordinary.
Very impressive.
It really is.
I put Gary Patterson ahead of him, I think.
Okay.
Look, Mike Gundy, it just feels like Oklahoma State has plateaued. Like, they are what they are. In some years, Mike Gundy wins 10 games, and that's great. But like, I just don't know if he has the potential to, like, ever win a Big 12 again or ever reach the college football playoff or anything like that. I just don't.
Without T. Boone Pickens, it's tough.
Because
I think every program like that needs a sugar daddy, and he was the sugar daddy. And I think it's tough without a true sugar daddy to give you all of those different resources you're going to need to compete at the highest levels. But I think he does more with less, which is what a lot of these –
Gary Patterson
does,
well,
too.
Like,
exactly.
Which part of me puts some of that blame on Mike Gundy. Like, I know Stillwater, Oklahoma is not the greatest place in the world, but the fact that they've had some of the success that they've had under Mike Gundy, and they still – it's like they don't even try to recruit that well.
It's not worth it for him. He said that they're going to lose most of those recruiting battles. It's not worth – they do better doing what Matt Campbell does and what Gary Patterson does. They don't go after the same guys Texas and Oklahoma do. It's no point in it.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to lose that battle, and then I'm spending resources and time and effort trying to get this guy. I'm not going to get him, and I could go after that three-star who I know has a really high ceiling that nobody's going after, like Gary Patterson and like Matt Campbell does, and that'll get me more return on my investment.
Yeah, but Matt Campbell's starting to recruit more blue-chip guys.
Yeah,
like
but
recruiting's never been better.
Their highest ranked recruiting class is like 46.
For sure.
Time.
So like, I just don't know why Mike Gundy never even tried to do that. Like, I feel like there was a time when the iron was hot where he could have really focused on improving recruiting a little bit and guys wanted to go there. I mean, they were sending a wide receiver to the league in the first round seemingly every other year. They had quarterbacks going in the first round.
That's true.
They had a lot of guys going to the first round and they just, I don't know. I'm talking too much. I think Mike Gundy's a very good coach. I feel like he's not a good coach.
I think they have tried to recruit those guys. I think they fail.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's the whole point. Like, they just can't do it. So he's got to stick with what's working for him. Okay, number 9 on this list is Matt Campbell at Iowa State. We all love Matt Campbell. It's a great story from CBS Sports, actually, that made me get interested in this article. How about this? The Detroit Lions, my old team, reportedly offered Matt Campbell an 8-year, $68.5 million deal with full control, and he turned it down to stay at Iowa State. I bet his wife is very upset by that news. I hope he told her about that.
It's a good move.
That's crazy. It's the Lions, but man, $69 million. Yeah. It's nice for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, any other team in football, I'd say he's an idiot. But Detroit, he's not seeing all that money. He's not making it the full 8 years.
Coaches' contracts are more guaranteed than players, so you can get it guaranteed.
You think it would have been fully guaranteed?
John Gruden just got it guaranteed.
Yeah.
Look at Matt Rule's deal.
You think the Lions were offering that? Maybe they were.
If they want to get him, if they're going to offer him that kind of money, you can in full control, you can say whatever the hell you want to say.
That's true.
The coaches are getting more love like that, dude. I'm telling you, Matt Campbell – I love Matt Campbell, by the way. I had a man crush on Matt Campbell for a long time. Yeah, you should if you're a Longhorn fan. The five-star culture versus the five-star player, and he is the epitome of it. Here's my favorite Matt Campbell stat. How about this? So if you look at it, in the 10 years prior to Matt Campbell, there was one winning season for Iowa State. Since then, they've had a winning season 4 out of 5 of the seasons he's been there. The losing season was his first season. He's just been unbelievable. Iowa State has won 4 of the last 10 versus Texas and Oklahoma. How does that happen?
It shouldn't.
And there was a couple of – and prior to Matt Campbell getting to Iowa State, they were 7-84-2 versus Texas and Oklahoma. And he's won 4 out of 10. Guy's a hell of a coach.
He is, man.
He's a hell of a
coach. Get him out of here.
I agree with that. And then number 3 on the list is Lincoln Riley. He's number 3 on the list. No shock there. Only guys ahead of him are Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban. So they have him as the 3rd best coach in the country.
You agree with that?
Yeah. I think he's pretty legit. I think he's elite. I mean, it's hard to find coaches that you would put ahead of him. Maybe Ryan Day. They have Ryan Day right behind him at 4, and they have Brian Kelly at 5.
Okay.
You put maybe Brian Kelly. They, by the way, Jimbo Fisher, they got number six.
I was going to say maybe Jimbo because he's won a national title.
They got Jimbo Fisher 96. So this is one thing I was saying. I'll end it on this. I know we're up against the break. For Sark, my big concern is how does he fare? How does he compete against elite coaches, right? Because that's when you're going to go scheme versus scheme. He's going to have to match wits with elite coaches like Mike Gundy, like Gary Patterson, like Lincoln Riley, like Matt Campbell. When he was in the Pac-12 at Washington, USC, he was 0-4 versus Chip Kelly, 0-2 versus Jim Harbaugh, 2-3 versus David Shaw, 1-2 versus Chris Peterson, couldn't beat Les Miles when he played him, couldn't beat Pete Carroll, 1-1 versus Bronco Mendenhall. The only elite coaches that he was able to beat consistently was Kyle Whittingham from Utah and Mike freaking Leach from Washington State. He's got to do better.
Yeah.
He's got to do better than that or he'll be gone.
He'll be gone. No doubt about that. Good stuff. Rod's rant of the day, a ranking of the top Power 5 coaches in college football. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. When we return, a Texas football commit tweeted out something very interesting within the last hour. Something that I don't think I've ever seen before. We'll tell you what it is next. Congrats to Scott. He was the winner of our Rangers ticket giveaway. Gave away a pair of tickets for Rangers Astros this Saturday at the Gilf in Arlington. And Scott came through. He was caller number 10 a few minutes ago. And
nice.
We'll get to see the Jers and Strohs duke it out inside the Gilf.
Break out the brooms. Again.
You calling it?
Nah. It won't be a sweep. They'll win the series, though.
Well, odds are.
You know, the Rangers. Hey, they might get a no-hitter.
I was going to say. Odds are one of those games will end in a no-hitter.
Yeah, who's on the mound for the Astros that week? We got to figure that out.
Dude, you or me could be on the mound for the Astros, and we could no-hit the Rangers.
Oh, man.
What a fun team to root for, huh?
Yeah. Hey, I'm a Texas fan, so I don't want to hear it.
That's fair.
Thank you.
That's fair. You guys are going through it, too, right now. All right, Rod, we've got about 20 minutes left in today's show before we send you off to Texas baseball, the Longhorns taking on West Virginia. We will preview that series in our next segment. But this caught my eye, a tweet that was sent out by Jaden Blue, who is a Texas commit. He's a running back,
mm-hmm.
part of the class of 2022. He goes to Klein Kane High School in the Houston area. He is a four-star. He's the number 3 running back in the country for the class of 2022. Big get for Texas. I was stoked when he committed to Texas a few months ago. Well, he tweeted out, 23 signing out, thanks to everyone for the support. Hashtag hook 'em. That was the actual tweet. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh my God, did he just decommit? Did Texas just lose Jaden Blue? That would have been terrible. But then he accompanied the words of his tweet with a screenshot of the iPhone Notes app. And he had typed out a statement basically explaining what his tweet was about. Here's what the statement reads. After countless hours of evaluation, I have made the decision to forego my senior season of high school football. This has been a very difficult decision for my family and I. Football is a brutal sport, and the wear and tear associated with the running back position is undeniable. I plan to take this time to focus on my academics while enhancing my off-the-field training/rehab regimen. This is a strategic and conscious effort to ensure that I am prepared to perform at an elite level at the collegiate rankings during the 2022 season. He went on to thank his coaches, his teammates, and everybody else at his high school. He ended the statement by saying, quote, "This is an incremental step in hopes of one day fulfilling my NFL dreams." Jaden Blue signing out, end quote. Rod, we've seen it before in college where a college football player will opt out of a full season, part of a season, a bowl game, to focus on the NFL. I don't know if we've ever seen this from a high school kid, where he is opting out of a full season of high school football to turn his attention to getting ready for college.
Other than for COVID, no. I can't remember anything. I remember, obviously, COVID had a lot of people opting out for safety reasons, and we all understood that. I can't remember a big-time high school recruit ever deciding, I'm just going to forego my senior year. I do understand the rationality and the thought process. It makes perfect sense. I actually applaud the young man for thinking on such a large scale, right? He and his family, I believe Mike Roach, I saw him write something about this maybe last week or something. It did say that he and his family have come to a decision about his health and moving forward, that for his career as a running back, and I'm thinking about professional career too, and those types of aspirations. He had a lot of carries in his high school career, a lot of touches, and they're thinking about limiting his touches. That's basically what it's about. They think he, in his senior year, they believe that they're going to be really good and they're going to make a run in the playoffs, and he could end up with a ton of carries, which is wear and tear that he's not being paid for. So they want to start his career at the next level as soon as possible to keep his body as fresh as possible. And I got to tell you, it actually makes a lot of sense. We know the running back position specifically.
Right.
All right. The shelf life is a really short shelf life, even at the NFL level. And what is it based on? All the metrics, all the analytics tell us it's based on carries. It's based on touches. Your body only has a certain amount of carries and touches in it. And when you get to that moment, unless you are Adrian Peterson or Eric Dickerson or one of those Hall of Fame freaks, your body's going to break down. Father Time's going to jump on your back and beat the hell out of you. And you're going to go from being an elite football player at that position to just being a jag and a scrub. And we've seen it time and time again.
Yeah.
The numbers bear it out. And I think this young man has looked at it and done the work and said, I'm trying to avoid that, or at least I'm trying to get to the NFL before I hit that magical number of carries that basically depletes me of my athleticism and of my ability to play the position.
I hate that I agree with everything you said, but I agree with everything.
I didn't want to agree with this young man, but the more I researched it, I think he's right.
It's a business decision.
It's crazy.
And we usually only talk about that with college players who have a guaranteed NFL future ahead of them. And it's going to suck if this becomes a thing. This happens all over the state, all over the country, where high school players just, I don't care about high school football. My goal is to play in college and then ultimately play in the league. So why should I focus on high school football right now?
It's crazy, man.
So I dread that because I love high school football, but I can't get too mad at Jaden Blue. As long as this doesn't affect his game, as long as he's still the player that Texas is getting, as long as for some reason he doesn't become a worse football player by
next year. It doesn't work out, stays out of shape, that kind of thing.
He's got to actually do what he says he's going to do. He's got to work out. He's got to train to be a college football player. But his logic, his reasoning, what he says in the statement makes sense. It's hard to argue it.
We've been arguing this about the running back position and the NFL draft and all that for years, right? This is part of the reason you don't invest a lot of draft capital in it. I'll give you a number. This is probably the number the young man is looking at before we go to break here. Because this is from ESPN Stats and Info. All right? So how about this? Overall, it said they looked at running backs with at least 75 carries since 2001. We're talking about a 20-plus year study, all right? It said overall, running backs see their careers peak at age 27. After that, their rushing totals dropped by 15% in 1 year, 25% in two, and almost 40% by the time they are 30 years old. So basically what they're saying is careers, you peak at 27 and that's it. So this young man's saying, all right, if I'm going to peak at 27, most of that is because of carries that you've accumulated in high school, college, and pro. He's trying to extend his shelf life as a running back. He was actually going to enroll early anyway. He was going to try to enroll in Texas in January, which means he was going to get done with his school early and graduate early so that he can enroll early in Texas. So essentially he's just, you know, foregoing that football season so that he can be fresh for the spring of Texas football, right? For spring football rather than regular season of high school football.
Yeah.
That's what he's prioritizing.
Bizarre.
It's bizarre, but might be the beginning of something, man.
It might be. Jaden Blue announcing that he is opting out of his senior year of high school.
Wow.
Pretty bizarre. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. When we come back, we'll set the table for Texas Longhorn baseball. It's next.
Pop a top again.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash?
Oh, yeah. I've been known to drink a beer or two.
I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds. It's only my opinion, sir.
I got beer.
I got bottled breast milk.
Why don't we start with the beer?
Okay.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Wait, it's already 5 o'clock here. It's time for What's on Tap.
How about a nice cool drink?
That's really
man,
good.
That's good. That's...
Pop a top again.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is time to wrap things up. We put them in the oven. Before we get done officially, we got to let you know what's on tap. Texas baseball coming up next. You got the pregame at 6:15,
mm-hmm.
First pitch at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. I didn't know that, but BK says it is, then that's what it is. All right, so don't go anywhere. Texas baseball coming up, their matchup versus West Virginia. If you missed any part of the show, please go to hornfm.com. You can catch up on the podcast page there with any of the shows you might have missed out on today or any of the shows you might have missed on this week. You can go to hornfm.com and go check things out there. All right, BK, I'm assuming you're going out to hang out with Occupy Left Field.
I'm going to be out there.
Nice.
Amongst the heathens.
Oh, dude, it's going to be wild.
Yep.
Yeah. Occupy Left Field guy's already said he's getting hype. I've seen some of his tweets.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, he's on it. He's going to be good.
You're going to scare me out of
No, no, no. You should go. That means it's going to be rocking. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah. Thank God I don't have to come into work until 3 o'clock tomorrow. Because I got a feeling I'm going to be roped into a lot of drinking out there tonight.
Yes, you will. So do it in a safe, responsible fashion.
I will. No, yeah. It'll be fun. It's my first time out at left field this year, so I'm looking forward to it. Massive, massive game. Yeah. Massive, massive series for the Longhorns. Chance to win the Big 12 title this weekend, Rod B.
That's right.
We obviously won't know the outcome of that until Sunday.
But you need the brooms to do it.
But we need the brooms to do it. Well, technically, we don't need the brooms.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if TCU gets swept in Manhattan.
Oh, okay. Well, that's unlikely.
Unlikely. Very, very unlikely. We're just praying K-State can win one of those games.
Control. I'm going to use a Tom Herman here. Control the controllables. There Remember Tom Herman said that?
Yeah, he said a lot of things, Tom Herman.
The controllable would be you facing West Virginia if you can sweep West Virginia. And that is, like you said, that's pretty realistic because West Virginia is a really bad team.
7-14 in the Big 12.
Really bad, man.
They're also 5-11 on the road this season. Texas at home, 25-4.
Got a capacity crowd potentially?
100% capacity at the dish all weekend long. Yeah, control what you can control. Texas needs to take care of business, and hopefully TCU helps Texas out by losing a game to K-State. You know, as a Kansas guy, Rod B., it's very rare that I root for K-State. I hate those guys. I have pretty close to an Oklahoma disdain for Kansas State.
Forget about that. You have a double hatred for K-State because of how they had the purple kryptonite against Texas for so long.
I'm rooting hard for K-State. EMAW, or whatever the hell they say.
What does that
there.
Mean?
Every man a wildcat.
Wow. I didn't even know that. I've never heard that.
It's not worth learning.
EMAW. Okay, good. Learn something new every day.
EMAW.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm excited for this one. Ty Madden on the bump tonight. He's been awesome all year long. Looking forward to watching him go up against Jackson Wolfe, West Virginia's ace. He's one of their best. He might be their best overall player, their pitcher tonight. Should be a fun matchup. But hopefully Texas can take care of business, man. Massive, massive series. And I'm excited to be out there.
Yeah, I'm excited for you, actually. How many times have you been around, like, large groups since, you know, COVID and everything?
It's picked up since getting the vaccine.
Well, because we did have our, like, Pluckers watch party or the draft party.
Yeah.
Then I just went. I mean, I've gone now to a bar and hung out.
Oh, yeah, we're back. Time. We're back, baby.
We're back, baby.
I'm pretty much back to normal.
F you, COVID.
Come on now.
Yeah, seems that way. Well, enjoy yourself,
that's
brother.
That's the slogan, all gas, no brakes, and F you, COVID. Those are the mantras.
I'm pretty sure that's the state of Texas and the University of Texas at this point.
What about you, man? Outside of watching this baseball game, what you got on tap tonight?
Isn't there basketball on?
Eastern Conference.
No. Oh, the Eastern Conference play-in. Oh, it was terrible.
Not nearly as exciting.
I can't guarantee I'm going to watch that, actually. I might try to watch it. I was just going to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch that. There's no guarantee I'm going to watch that. So I might be watching some trash TV.
What about playoff hockey?
Oh, man, that's a better chance of me watching the Eastern Conference play-in than playoff hockey.
Come on.
I wish I could watch that. All right, maybe I'll glance at it when I'm like flipping through the channels.
Don't lie to me.
Right. I won't lie to you. I might be watching this golf up here before I watch the playoff hockey. No, I'm just joking. I watch hockey before golf.
There you go.
All right, I want to thank my man BK for doing a great job. As always, I want to thank my man KD because he was here in spirit. But you guys out there listening, you are the real MVP. So we appreciate you guys as always. Remember, if you missed any part of the show, just go to hornfm.com. You can catch up to any of the shows that you may have missed. Remember, same time tomorrow. Same place tomorrow. Please join us. Everybody be safe out there. Go enjoy this beautiful evening. I love you guys. We love you guys, and we mean that for real. Peace.